This is KGNU's Morning Magazine. It's Tuesday, March 15th of 2022. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's show, we'll hear about a new series of programs offered by El Centro Amistad to reduce the health gap needs of the Latino community in Boulder County. You could be unknowingly feeding your cat endangered shark meat. More on that in H2O Radio's This Week in Water. And there were no voicemails this week on the listener comment line. Instead, we'll share a report from one of our Rocky Mountain Community Radio sister stations. At the bottom of the hour, we'll go to the BBC News headlines. Then it's How on Earth? On this week's science show, we hear from the former director of the National Institute of Mental Health about the state of mental health care in the U.S. At 9 a.m. comes Alan Watts, the British philosopher, writer, and speaker known for interpreting Eastern religious ideas for a Western audience. Then at 9:30, Terry Reardon will be in the Boulder studio to bring you 2.5 hours of eclectic music with the Morning Sound Alternative. All that's still ahead, but first, it's time for local and regional headlines with KGNU's Stacey Johnson.
Aurora City Council advanced an urban camping ban yesterday evening by a one-vote margin. The proposed ordinance, sponsored by Mayor Mike Kaufman, would ban unauthorized public camping. Enforcement of urban camping bans usually targets people without homes to sleep in. Council members opposing the measure were Allison Coombs, Angela Lawson, Juan Marcano, Ruben Medina, and Crystal Moreno. Prior to last night's vote, Moreno introduced an amendment that directs the city manager to craft a policy allowing for temporary storage of belongings seized during a forced sweep of an encampment. Since the City Council passed a substantial amendment to the proposed ordinance, council members will next need to undergo a third vote at the City Council meeting scheduled for March 28th. Split council member debate last August forced the Aurora City Council to shelve a proposed camping ban ordinance, but the ban was revived after November's election gave conservatives a narrow majority. The Aurora Sentinel reports the city currently abates or sweeps homeless encampments using a variety of laws and regulations, but the new ban would codify rather than change the city's policy on notice, consequences for refusing to leave, and requirements for shelter availability. Crews from the North Metro Fire Department responded to a small fire late Saturday afternoon that occurred at an oil and gas pad near 156th Avenue and Huron Street in Broomfield. Officials reported no injuries or structural damage. According to a Broomfield press release, the operator, Extraction Oil and Gas, Inc., Civitas, will provide a root cause analysis within 7 days. According to the operator's notification summary on the incident, it reported the cause as an upset condition that occurred during drilling operations that sent some hydrocarbons to the combustor. Since there was no structural damage, crews restarted operations late Sunday afternoon with officials from the city and county of Broomfield and fire department personnel present. Colorado labor officials report that 98% of jobs lost since the beginning of COVID have been recovered. KGNU's Steve Miller has more.
January's 4.1% unemployment rate, the lowest since the pandemic began, is still higher than the 2.8% in February of 2020, which was the month before the first COVID-19 cases in Colorado were confirmed. Ryan Jedney, labor economist at the State Department of Labor and Employment, said that the 2.8% was historically low because it was after the end of a very long economic increase. If the unemployment trends continue to decrease, Jedney sees that the state could reach the 3% level in 1 or 2 years. Colorado's job increase last year ranked the fourth highest in the U.S. While more people are part of the state's labor force, there are still around 132,000 Coloradans who are unemployed, compared with 86,000 who were unemployed in February of 2020. The data shows more people are returning to work, especially mothers who had dropped out of the workforce early on to deal with their children and remote schooling or lack of child care options during the pandemic. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
The City of Boulder announced yesterday it has launched a new emergency notification system that will allow police and fire personnel to send alerts and warnings to the public via cell phones. According to the city's press release, messages will light up enabled cell phones in a specific geographic area with sounds and texts similar to amber alerts and warnings from the National Weather Service. Users will not be required to opt in or subscribe to the service. Boulder's prior alert system sent limited notifications to landlines and to any cell phone users who registered for notifications through Everbridge. A consortium of 12 organizations and community leaders, including leaders from Colorado's Asian American and Pacific Islander nonprofits, will host a panel discussion honoring the victims killed a year ago in Atlanta because of anti-Asian hate crime. According to the event organizers, panelists will share resources and ways to get involved with local community efforts to address a sharp increase in discrimination and violence experienced by Asians and Asian Americans. The event begins at 10 a.m. today at the Colorado School of Public Health's Injury and Violence Prevention Center. Colorado lawmakers introduced a bill last week to increase security and training for people running elections. The bill would require key cards and round-the-clock surveillance for rooms in which election equipment is stored. It also mandates election workers complete an intensive training geared towards teaching workers about how to spot disinformation. The proposal for the new law comes in response to ongoing disputes with Mesa County Clerk and Recorder Tina Peters. Last week, a jury indicted Peters for election tampering and misconduct. She faces 7 felony and 3 misdemeanor charges. Today's weather along the Upper Metro Front Range includes more sunshine with highs in the mid to upper 60s. Tonight will be partly cloudy with lows in the 30s. A chance of rain is forecasted for tomorrow in the afternoon hours. The current temperature in Boulder is 32 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Stacy Johnson.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. Boulder-based El Centro Amistad is expanding its offerings of programs to address the emotional, physical, educational, and spiritual needs of the Latino community. KGNU's Rosana Longo-Better spoke with El Centro Amistad's Mar Matlac and Leticia Abajo Torrijos about the importance of providing these programs to the local Spanish-speaking community.
My name is Mar Matlac, coordinator of an art program called Artesana. It's basically like the idea of a women's circle where we do art, celebrate our ability to create, celebrate our roots, and learn more about our culture. This is a group in Spanish. Most of the people that attend are immigrants. It's also free for everybody that wants to join. It's important because we can be in community together, we can think, we can create, we can talk. The purpose is to do art, but we end up doing so much more than that. We check in with each other, we talk, sometimes we end up dancing, and it's so beautiful to see that some of us have the idea that we are not good for art, but at the end, discovering that, yeah, you can create, you can produce something with your own hands.
Explain to us, how is it that you bring the two things together of communication and art and offer these to the community?
I have lived in different countries, and I have the opportunity of working with women's circle in different setups. So that's why when I came here and I started working with compañeras, I was looking for an art program myself because I'm an artist and that's my safe space. And I quickly realized that there weren't any places where I could take an art class in Spanish. So having the opportunity of being part of compañeras, and of course, the support of Elena, that's how Artesana was born.
You have mentioned Elena Aranda, that is founder of El Centro Amistad. So I would like now to allow Leticia Abajo Torrijos to also talk to us about what's El Centro Amistad and how is it that your programs with your expertise too are offering to the community unique support.
Thank you, Rosana. Thank you for having us. El Centro Amistad is a nonprofit organization that focus on reducing the gap to health needs for the Spanish speakers in Boulder County. We work with our community to reduce the gap in mental health, physical health, spiritual and emotional health. We do this through many different programs. We have programs like Artesana is part of Compañeras. Within Compañeras, we have other programs too, like Círculo de Bienestar Emocional, which is an emotional well-being circle, which is a program that focuses on mental health issues, and so people can access mental health providers without cost. We have also Salud y Bienestar, which means health and wisdom, and that is targeted to people who are 50 years and older, so they can create their own community. And we have different programs about health, about art, about movement. We have other programs like ellos, and ellos means they, but in the masculine, it means they for men and boys. And that program goes to high schools to work with young Latino men and kids to create a good, healthy, and positive identity that challenges the stereotype that society wants to impose on young Latino men. Then we have Escuela de Madres y Padres, Mothers and Fathers School. That is a program that Elena Aranda created herself, and it's evidence-based through CU. We learn to parent in a way that goes well with our culture, and in a way that examines the way we were raised and what worked, what didn't work. It's based on dialectical behavioral therapy. It's an amazing program. It's about 8 or 10 weeks. We have a little bit for everybody. You know, we have just about everything. And then we have Promotoras de Salud, health promoters. And Promotoras de Salud is a program that works directly with the community to teach about the sugar intake and sugary drinks. From that, El Reto, which is an 8-week program that you work with a promotora to improve your health habits. And then we do the race at the end, which is called El Reto de Boulder, the challenge, Boulder Challenge, and El Retito, which is for kids. And that's an obstacle course race. We are everywhere, to tell you the truth. I'm sure I'm forgetting stuff.
Centro Amistad touches every aspect and every age. Why is it so urgent to address issues of mental health, physical health, and spiritual health, especially for our Latino community, our Latinx community?
I think the pandemic has been terrible for everybody, but it's brought a lot of light into things that were before forgotten or, you know, taboo. And one of them is mental health. And for a community and a culture that thrives working together, that is gregarious, that is community-oriented, the pandemic has created a lot of struggle. I mean, in everybody, of course, but not being able to gather with your family, not being able mm-hmm. to gather with your friends, and not being able to just work together and live together has created a lot of depression, anxiety in young people and older people. For those who are 50 and older, and for our elders, it's been worse because the isolation is already there. Not everybody has the means or understands how to connect online. A lot of people don't have transportation. So that's one aspect of why mental health is important. And then physical health, you know, all of the Americas, all of the descendants of the First Nations have a higher tendency to diabetes and other diseases. And so, and they are also targeted by the industries that sell sugary drinks higher, at way higher levels than others. So that creates a big problem, health problem for all our Spanish speakers. And that's why we're informing how to live healthier. The United States cannot survive without the Latinx community. Let's put it simply like that. In so many areas, right? And so that's why we have to take care of us, you know?
The working class, the people that are behind the scenes many times to make things work.
And bilingual lawyers and bilingual doctors and bilingual professors.
All
we're
over.
Here to stay. That's
so
why
much.
I think it's important.
I have been speaking with Leticia Abajo Torrijos and Mar Matlak del Centro Amistad. Thank you so much for taking the time.
You're welcome. Thank you for having
Thank
us.
Thank you, Rosana.
Thank you.
Time now for This Week in Water with Jamie Sudler and Franny Halperin.
Kite energy might start to soar. That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
The Amazon rainforest has played a vital role in regulating global climate by absorbing heat-trapping CO2 and storing it in vegetation. But because of deforestation and global warming, it may be reaching a tipping point where it becomes a grassy savanna and forests can't return.
A new study says more than three-quarters of the rainforest, particularly near urban areas, has lost its ability to recover because of deforestation from logging and slash-and-burn practices to promote farming. Weather extremes and drought further reduce the forest's ability to bounce back.
Well, the study says that the process of transforming the Amazon into a savanna could take decades. It would have significant effects of accelerating the climate crisis dramatically, changing regional weather patterns, and endangering biodiversity. Even just a partial dieback would lead to more global warming.
The researchers worry that a sudden release of greenhouse gases from the Amazon would put the goal of the Paris Agreement to limit temperature rise to 1.5 degrees Celsius out of reach.
If you have a cat, have you ever looked at the ingredients of their favorite food? If it lists vague terms like fish, ocean fish, or whitebait, according to a new study from the National University of Singapore, you might be feeding your furry friend endangered shark meat.
Researchers used DNA barcoding to analyze 45 different pet food products that were sold in Singapore. They found about one-third of the samples, which included top brands such as Shiba, Whiskas, and Fancy Feast, contained shark DNA.
The most commonly identified species were blue shark, silky shark, and the white-tip reef shark, the latter two of which are listed as vulnerable on the internationally recognized red list.
Sharks are crucial for keeping marine ecosystems in balance, but it's estimated that their numbers have declined by more than 70% in the last 50 years, impacting entire food chains and the health of seagrass beds and coral reefs.
The researchers say three-quarters of all shark species are considered at risk of extinction, in part because of the demand for their fins, but also because of their use in pet food and cosmetics. They say around 100 million sharks may be killed annually.
Shark DNA has also been found in pet food samples and a wide range of beauty products sold in the U.S. The authors are calling for globally implemented standards to avoid overexploitation of endangered species and more transparency in labeling to help consumers make informed choices.
The invasion of Ukraine has underscored the urgency of getting off fossil fuels, which, beyond furthering the climate crisis, are putting energy security at risk for countries dependent on Russia's natural gas.
In response, European governments are speeding up their transition to renewables such as wind and solar, and as they do, a new technology might be part of the mix. Kites.
A German company called Sky Sails Power has launched the world's first airborne wind energy system at a pilot site on the island nation of Mauritius off the coast of Africa. Its kite looks like a paraglider sail and moves in a figure-eight pattern in the sky. As it flies, it tugs on its tether to power a generator on the ground.
Kites have an advantage over wind turbines by being able to reach higher altitudes where the wind blows stronger and more consistently. Experts say wind energy a half mile above Earth could be 4.5 times greater than at ground level.
Kites could bring relatively cheap energy to remote locations or be tethered to barges in deep ocean waters beyond where traditional wind turbines can be anchored. Their height is adaptable, so they can be moved up or down to access winds that change with the seasons, or stowed away during severe weather or hurricanes.
Interest in kites is soaring, with companies in the Netherlands and Norway developing systems. But while they go high, a Swedish-based company is going low, as in deep underwater. Its tethered glider will sail through ocean currents to generate power. And finally, since the 1960s, the river running through the heart of Chicago has been legally dyed green to celebrate St. Patrick's Day. This year was no exception.
But people have been unlawfully coloring other portions of the Chicago River in recent years, which can harm fish and wildlife, in particular river otters, which have made a stunning comeback following efforts in recent decades to clean the waterway.
River otters used to be endangered in Illinois, but are no longer after being reintroduced in the 1990s. The population of the animals in the state has soared from about 100 to 20,000.
Authorities were out patrolling during the parade last weekend to make sure illegal dyes were not put into the river that could hurt not only otters, but also fish and other aquatic species.
The ingredients of the official dye are a closely guarded secret, but the group Friends of the Chicago River told WTTW-TV they'd like to see a new tradition that highlights the river ecosystem and offers a greener way to celebrate St. Patrick's Day.
That's it for this week in water, which is sponsored by Bring Back the Blue, working to remove plastics from the ocean to support energy projects and the blue economy. Learn more at bringbacktheblue.blue.
Around this time on a Tuesday morning, we air messages from our listener comment line. But the voicemail box was empty this week, so that provides just the opportunity I've been seeking to air this fun report shared by our Rocky Mountain Community Radio sister station in Moab. Looking to include your dog more in your mountain biking? There's a growing sport that could be for you. It's called Bike Jor, and it's like dog sledding without the snow. Justin Higginbottom visited a race in Moab, Utah, to hear about the hobby and pet a few dogs along the way.
It's a windy day at the Klondike Bluffs just north of Moab, and a German short-haired pointer named Lark is at the starting line. She's wearing a harness attached by bungee to her owner's mountain bike. And she's antsy, a bit like a sled dog that can't wait to start pulling.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
And she's off, taking her owner and race partner barreling down the track. Today is the second day of the country's first ever single track Bike Jor race.
So Bike Jor racing is where you strap a mushing, like a sled dog, onto the front of your mountain bike and race as a team.
Brad Cassing is an avid racer and organizer of today's event. He lucked into the sport after adopting a sled dog from a kennel in Minnesota. Cassing is a mountain biker and heard of this way to include his new friend in the hobby.
No idea what it was. I was super skeptical. I never imagined that you could have a dog that just stayed ahead of the bike, much less pulled you the entire time. And from day one, it was just so much fun. And yeah, we've been doing it since 4 years now.
Today's race is unique. Competitors are racing on a single track trail instead of a wider path or road. Before this weekend, organized single track races were only found in Europe.
The sport is definitely changing to be more inviting to people who are looking to challenge their own technical skills more. So it's definitely on the way up.
And Moab is known for single-track mountain bike trails. The area could be perfect for the sport. Here's another racer, Sarah Casing, Brad's wife.
The average speed on a trail like this, like I was going about 13 to 14 on average on a trail like this. Brad was probably, you were probably going 14, 15 today.
Way to go, girl! Come on, girl, way to go!
And here comes Lark into the finish line. She looks wide-eyed, manic, and very happy with her time.
The true rock stars, especially in Europe, are what are called graysters. So they're mostly a German short-haired pointer with a little bit of greyhound. Some might have even a tiny bit of Alaskan husky mixed in, or even pure German short-haired pointers, especially in Europe. Like, those are the true rock stars of the sport.
There's a range of dogs among the half dozen or so competitors here. Most basically look like your average house dog. One small pooch with a stud collar looks like he spends his non-racing time on his owner's lap. The BLM is out today monitoring the event, just because it's the first of its kind in the area.
So when Rocky Mountain Sled Dog applied for the permit, you know, it was new to us, so we wanted to see how it worked. And before we wrote the permit, we'd never seen it, of course, but I did watch it on video. I watched quite a few videos.
That's Katie Stevens of the BLM. She says the dogs and humans stayed on the trails, and participants cleaned up after their dogs.
And these people are really into their sport, as you can see, and really into their animals. So, you know, it's that's one of the functions of public land, is to provide a venue for the public to enjoy their land. And this is another sport that we can provide that venue for.
There was at least one local that voiced a concern over the treatment of the dogs here. Organizer Brad Casing says he's had complaints like that before. He says they come from those not too familiar with the sport.
It is a very safe thing. You know, if you train a dog, they understand very well how to participate safely with you.
For example, the animals respond to voice commands, and at the end of the day, he says it's hard to make a dog pull you well on a bike if they don't want to.
And sometimes people will get a dog for this, you know, it might even come out of racing lines, and some dogs are just not into it, and those dogs don't end up being, you know, mushing or bike jar dogs, they just become bike buddies. So yeah, that's the other thing I want people to know is that like every dog that's doing this that's racing is a dog that wants to be out here racing.
Today at least, these dogs seem like they wouldn't want to be anywhere else. Justin Higginbottom for Rocky Mountain Community Radio.
That's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. Thanks to Stacy Johnson, Steve Miller, Rashik Jahan, Rosanna Longo-Better, Jamie Sudler, Franny Halperin, and Justin Higginbottom for their contributions to today's program. I've been your host, Shannon Young. If you'd like to make a comment on something you heard on KGNU, you can leave us a message on our listener comment line at 303-447-9911. Stay tuned for How on Earth. That's coming up just after these news headlines from the BBC.